Momentum for gun control saw a brief but fleeting reach across the aisle after the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history last month in Las Vegas. Republicans joined Democrats in weighing restrictions to bump stocks. Last week, Massachusetts became the first state to enact a ban on bump stocks, those accessories that allow semi-automatic firearms to mimic the rapid firing action of machine guns. The question is, can Congress enact fresh legislation addressing gun violence or mental health? Laura Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. She also served in the Department of Education during President Bill Clinton's administration. Her areas of expertise include presidential politics and elections, congressional incumbents, and American political parties. Laura, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Well, what was your reaction to the shooting in Texas?
Well, I don't think there can be any reaction but just overwhelming sense of sadness over the loss and the tragedy that was endured in Texas. I mean, the number of lives lost in that community and the percentage of the people who are from that community, 4% of the actual community's lives were lost. So it's just horrible and horrific. And obviously we have the news out today that the gunman should have been prevented from purchasing guns. So that makes it even sort of more awful.
Yeah, authorities say the 26-year-old Devin Patrick Kelly received a dishonorable discharge from the Air Force for bad conduct in 2014. He, in this situation, could have been in the middle of a domestic situation, they said, about Sunday's shooting. President Trump has said, you know, this was a mental health issue at the highest level. Is this a black and white situation, as President Trump says, that it's a mental health issue and not a guns problem?
Well, I don't think that you can characterize this as a mental health issue. I mean, one of the things that is true about Devin Kelly is he was essentially court-martialed for having been involved in some pretty horrible domestic violence situations, and to the point where he had actually fractured his stepson's skull. So he was not necessarily somebody who was suffering from a mental health problem. He was somebody who was violent and had been charged and had pled guilty to a crime. And the Air Force neglected to input that court-martial into the FBI system, and as a result, he did pass his background checks.
And one of the questions that is coming up after the shooting was how Kelly got a gun. We're hearing now that there was this glitch that the Air Force is looking into. His domestic violence court-martial should have barred him from buying weapons, but it turns out that an Air Force officer failed to enter Kelly's details into a national database. The agency says it's going to review its databases to make sure records in other cases are all up to date. What is your reaction to this?
Well, again, this is a terrific tragedy and a horrible sort of oversight and error on the part of the Air Force, which has now led to an individual who shouldn't have had a gun having guns. But it is also important to note that in the vast majority of the mass shootings, many of those who had guns would have passed and did pass a federal background check. So this is where I think the controversy is difficult, both for those people who would like to see kind of more, rules on guns and more controls in terms of who can buy them and how they are purchased, as well as really those people who believe that, you know, most of the people who buy guns are using them legally, which is the case. So we do have a real issue in this country, and there are questions. I don't think there's any question about the fact that we have more guns in the United States than any other country in the world in terms of just the sheer volume on a per capita basis.
We're talking about gun politics this hour with Laura Brown, an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Are incidents like the Sutherland Springs and Las Vegas shootings, is this the price Americans have to pay for gun freedoms? Does America need stricter gun control measures? How does Congress act? 800-642-1234. Laura, many congressional Democrats responded with calls for stricter gun control. No surprise there. Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut put out a lengthy statement that included remarks like the terrifying fact is that no one is safe so long as Congress chooses to do absolutely nothing in the face of this epidemic. The time is now for Congress to shed its cowardly cover and do something. How likely is it for Congress to do anything?
Well, I think it's highly unlikely because at the moment what you do have is that both chambers of the Congress, the House and the Senate, are controlled by Republicans, and Republicans have a long history and working relationship with the National Rifle Association, and the National Rifle Association certainly is not in favor of any stricter gun control laws.
And let's go back to bump stocks then, because that was a moment, an opening, it looked like, that the NRA was siding there to have more regulation on bump stocks. And what happened?
Well, I think what you saw was a response to a specific tragedy and a realization that essentially a kind of improvised attachment to a gun could turn a semi-automatic rifle into a fully automatic rifle. And there was a realization that that was not really something anyone outside the military should have access to. But as is true across our politics, these laws are just very, very difficult to move forward. I mean, part of it is that Congress has many more issues on its plate right now other than just gun control and the gun laws. It is looking at tax reform and the Dreamers, right, immigration reform. It's trying to also deal with ensuring that the government doesn't shut down in December. So there's a lot on the plate of our members of Congress, and I think in the wake of these tragedies, members want to be responsive, and certainly Democrats want to push the politics that they believe are so important, even if they know that they aren't going to go much further than rhetoric.
Pursuing special interest groups in the era here of that we live in, how big an obstacle is the NRA and other gun groups from having meaningful change implemented through law, through action, through Congress?
Well, it's important to realize, first of all, I think one of the statements that's used often is that phrase, special interests. The reality from a political standpoint is that every individual in the United States has an interest group that is special to them. And so there are many constituents all across this country who support the National Rifle Association, and the National Rifle Association then organizes those individuals at a grassroots level to bring pressure to members of Congress in various districts around the country. So I think it's important to realize that if the gun control advocates want to sort of bring back a different kind of pressure, they need to look at ways to organize more effectively at the grassroots level. Because what we're really talking about here is that members of Congress do represent the people in their districts And many of the people in their districts agree with the National Rifle Association.
Just steps from the church crime scene in Sutherland Springs, Texas, yesterday, Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, assailed the news media and Democrats for immediately seeking legislative solutions to the latest outbreak of gun violence. Quote, "It is an unfortunate thing that the immediate place the media goes after any tragedy, after any murder, is politicizing it. We don't need politics right now," end quote. Or do we? Laura Brown is with us. She is an associate professor, director of Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join in as well, 800-642-1234. Are incidents like the Sutherland Springs and Las Vegas shootings the price we have to pay for gun freedoms? Join in the conversation or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Democrats and some Republicans have introduced dozens of proposals this year to address gun violence, but there is no bill poised for consideration in a House or Senate committee or scheduled for an up or down vote. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell signaled yesterday that there are no immediate plans to take up legislation to address gun violence. We're exploring gun politics and Congress with Laura Brown. She's an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's author of Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. You can join in this conversation as well on Insights on Gun Politics, 800-642-1234. Along the lines of what President Trump said, are mass shootings more of a mental health issue? Are mass shootings like Las Vegas, like Sutherland Springs, the price Americans pay for gun freedoms? Let's go to Dave now in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show. The thought I have is, I'm a Democrat. I like to think I'm a reasonable Democrat. I have guns. I enjoy shooting with my son. But there has to be legislation to address these military-grade rifles and the large capacity clips. That is a given, and I think in time that will happen. What my comment here is there a way to stop this? How can we do it, short of putting police or people with guns everywhere where we live? And the thought is, the one thing that drives a lot of people to do this kind of thing, or at least one of the reasons they do it, is the notoriety that comes from this type of thing. These people become famous for 15 minutes. Usually they're dead, but the thought is, and I don't know that this is possible, I don't think humans can do it, but could we all agree across the globe to just not cover these events the way we do? In other words, when it happens, the local news can tell the local people about it, but national news shouldn't cover it. Just don't give them the notoriety that they seek. I'm just wondering what you guys think of that.
Laura Brown, go ahead.
Well, I think it's, it's a nice thought in the sense that you really do want to recognize what has happened here, but at the same time not give those perpetrators of a violent crime kind of the celebrity status that does come with all of the media coverage. Unfortunately, I think that you'll never be able to essentially change that within the media because these stories are news. It is important for an entire country to reflect on what it means for, 26 people to die on a Sunday in a church. And this is where we have this huge problem. I would submit that part of the reason why these people do this isn't necessarily just for the media attention or the coverage that comes after they've died, but some of it is really their own way to commit suicide. I think what we know is that many of these people are sort of looking for a way out of their life, and unfortunately, they have a desire to take some people with them, and I think that's really where we have this problem. And some of it is related to mental health issues, but not all of it. As I think some studies have shown, domestic violence is oftentimes one of the correlates with these mass shooting incidents where more than one person has died, and that was, in fact, a correlate to this case itself.
Laura, let's go in a little bit to what Senator Ted Cruz talked about, and perhaps what Dave is touching on here a little bit. Senator Ted Cruz said it's an unfortunate thing that the immediate place the media goes after any tragedy is politicizing it. We don't need politics right now. What do you make of Senator Ted Cruz there?
Well, I think that's somewhat disingenuous in that you saw after the truck attack up in New York just last week that, you know, that incident was immediately politicized. And obviously it was related to an individual who was engaged in sort of ISIS-inspired terrorist acts. And so that leads to a more natural kind of politicization of that moment. But I think it's also fair to say that for many people who favor gun control and who look at every one of these mass shootings as being just horrible tragedies, it's no surprise that it becomes instantly politicized as well.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's go to Tom now in New Berlin. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I don't know if more gun laws are really the question or really the answer to the issue. Over the years, we keep tightening and tightening all our laws on guns, and these shootings keep happening more and more prevalently. I think we need to look at more where it's happening. You know, it's happening in quiet neighborhoods and Christian churches and by these people that are just completely, nobody saw it coming. It's not done in high crime rates where there's the gang wars, which there's a purpose to it. These people that commit these acts are mentally not stable. You have to have a disconnect to be able to mow down that many people that you've never met. There's a disconnect there.
So, Tom, you're saying that gun laws won't stop these types of mass shootings?
Not at all. Just like you were just talking about the truck and the ISIS-inspired guy. It's a different tool. You can still cause all kinds of damage. Slow cookers, damage. Trucks, damage. Knives, damage. Guns, damage. You can do it with whatever you want. It's just if you're that messed up to want to commit this crime, we need to look into why is this? Why are these people going to these lengths? You know, is it for fame? Like Dave brought up, it's a very good point. But with social media, we're never going to be able to keep everyone from sharing it.
Tom, thanks for calling in. Laura, guns won't stop what's going on here, as Tom is saying. What do you make of that?
Well, I think this is where this is a really complicated issue. There is a reality that the studies have shown that because Americans have such available access to guns, Americans are also more likely to die of a gun-related death than other individuals in the world. So there's no doubt that, you know, I mean, I think there's a New York Times article that talks about the fact that a New Yorker is as likely to be robbed as somebody in London, but in New York they're more likely to essentially die because of it and because of the availability of guns. But the problem here is that we have had some bans in the past. We did have an assault weapons ban that did pass in the 1990s, in 1993, 1994, and its provisions were sunsetted. So this is where I think getting back to sort of our first call in talking about what types of guns shouldn't be necessarily out there or available to the public, I do think is a really legitimate question, right? If the shooter, Devin Kelly, had not had, you know, a Ruger gun and was able to unload three different magazines into that church, there would have been a much less kind of damage on the people and the lives lost than if he had, you know, simply had a handgun at his disposal. So it is a complicated issue. Americans do have the freedom to go and purchase a gun, but they also do have some restrictions around who can own a gun. And this is where we just have too many loopholes and many questions, really, about what will be effective in addressing the problems.
Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn of Texas said yesterday, quote, "Do you pass more laws when the laws that are on the books were likely violated?" Does he have a point there?
Well, he does, in the sense that we talk about this with regard to illicit drugs all of the time, right? Individuals who want drugs and are interested in taking drugs will violate the laws to do so. Similarly, there are people who are going to violate the laws in order to obtain a gun, in order to commit a crime. So there is a reality about, I think, the criminal mindset, or somebody who is so disturbed that they want to commit a violent act, either against themselves or against other people. But of course, part of society's job is to try to prevent those violent acts from occurring. And that is where we get into this question of, would closing more loopholes in the purchasing of guns help? Would it be better to have more strictures on the types of guns that are sold? What really will make a difference in the lives of Americans is difficult to know, partly because some of this research that should be done in this area hasn't been done because of pressure essentially on the federal government not to learn more about guns and gun-related deaths.
Let's go to Saeed in Brookfield. Hi, Saeed. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My thinking about this is, this is a big, big mental health issue in this country, and again, probably in many other countries too. And mental health is not really looked at as a something as important as physical health. While, you know, a lot of consequences can come out of, you know, mental health, because you can, you know, inflict pain on yourself while you're suffering, and you can inflict pain on many other people, like what happened here. And it's such a big stigma that nobody wants to talk about it, nobody wants to deal with it. But if there is education around it, that people around other people that are going through these conditions, if they see the signals, they can pick on it. Or in this instance, like the mother-in-law that just got the violent messages, should have gone right away to the police and let them know that this person that has a history of abuse and violence is not threatening me. It's just that we, you know, because of our culture, we're ashamed to talk about mental health.
So would you agree, Saeed, President Trump's comments on this, that this is a mental health problem at the highest level?
It is, but again, that's one facet. I wasn't going to, you know, take too much time and get into the gun aspect of it, because that's been talked about so many years and so long, and really nothing is happening, because for as long as NRA has such a strong foothold, political foothold, and again, according to your guest too, the constituent, the good people with guns, have a right to that. And you know, it's just a certain number of class of guns that need to be controlled. But the mental, President's comment was one line, very narrow. I agree with him. It was one side of this story, but it wasn't the whole story.
Saeed, thanks so much for that comment. Laura, what would happen if Congress just completely walked away from the whole gun debate altogether, wouldn't put forth any ideas or committees, and just completely washed its hands of it?
Well, I think to a certain extent they have, by their inaction. So really what we see is that You know, the CDC hasn't done many investigations into guns and sort of the gun culture in America and gun-related deaths. Much of the kind of research that is being done is being done by advocacy groups. And I think you also see kind of this helplessness that occurs every time one of these mass shootings arise. You hear Republicans saying it's a mental health problem, Democrats saying it's a gun problem, and then you really have no action and essentially no willingness to really even investigate what could be the problem and what are some potential solutions.
Let's bring in Barry in Spooner. Hi, Barry.
Hi, my kind of comment and question was basically that as I listen to the gun debate, the people that are presenting it lack definitions and terminology to know what they're asking for. For example, assault rifles are banned. There's no question about that by the definition of assault rifle. So when they say things like assault style, they're trying to redefine or create a new term. They need to understand guns in order to come up with something that's tangible. But just saying they want less guns that do something. All guns are destructive, so they need to know what they're talking about in order to actually make legislation. The overview is we've got a problem and we need to stop it. Doesn't do anything if they can't even use the same words.
Laura, gray areas in the terminology when we're talking about guns.
Oh, I think that's so true. I mean, I think one of the problems is that many of the guns that are manufactured and sold are also changed or modified, right, to move around the law. I mean, this was kind of the classic example with the bump stocks. What you had was essentially an improvised, add-on that could turn a semi-automatic into a fully automatic, partly because fully automatics are banned. So this is where I think it is very true that terminology is very difficult, and part of that is this is a growing market. It is, kind of a reality that most people, even those who own guns, are not necessarily owning every style of gun that is manufactured, and this is where I think there is a tremendous amount of sort of uncertainty and a lack of education about what is needed in different places. But it is also true that the assault weapons ban of 2013 that Dianne Feinstein, who had been one of the original authors of the assault weapons ban of 1994, that it was put forward after Sandy Hook and it was defeated in the Senate. So it is important to understand that part of the congressional history is that some of the actual legislation that did prevent some of the violence, or I should say, we don't know if it prevented some of the violence. There's a counterfactual problem in this, has been sunsetted, and part of that legislation did pass away after the 1994 federal ban did sunset.
Barry, thank you so much for the call, bringing that point up. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas visited Sutherland Springs yesterday, telling reporters that we don't need politics right now when asked about possible gun control legislation. Instead, the senator said we should be celebrating the bravery and courage of the bystander who exchanged gunfire with Devin Patrick Kelly, the man who opened fire on worshipers at the First Baptist Church on Sunday. Cruz's appearance comes after a visit by Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Sunday and ahead of a visit by Vice President Mike Pence that is scheduled for tomorrow. Laura Brown stays with us to understand the politics surrounding gun violence. She's an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join this conversation as well, 800-642-1234. Back after a news update. So here's what we know. 26-year-old Devin Patrick Kelly opened fire in a church in rural Texas on Sunday, killing at least 26 people. As many as half of the victims were children. This isn't a gun situation, President Trump said. This is a mental health problem at the highest level. Do you believe that gun violence is a problem we need to address? What should Congress do about it? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Laura Brown is with us for this conversation on gun politics. She's an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Let's take a call now. Sachin in De Pere. Go ahead, Sachin.
Hi. I want to make just three quick comments. The reason why I called in was that I'm listening to your show, and I get upset about gun control, and I'm on the side that wants to control guns more. But I just find that every time Sandy Hook, whatever the incident is, everything that can be said gets said, and we just get left at an impasse at the end of the situation, and then we move on. And I'm just struggling to understand what breaks this impasse. So I think your guest made an interesting comment about the need for grassroots activism on the gun control side, but yet that doesn't happen. So I'm just wondering what really does break the impasse here. Second comment I wanted to make is on Trump's comment, saying it's a mental health issue. I think he's correct, and we're all addressing that issue. I think Saeed's call was important on that front as well. But then again, there's also an issue with the means that people have to inflict large-scale damage, and we need to address that as well. And the third comment I want to make is that at our company, we have about 500 people that we employ in rural parts of Wisconsin. And these people are overwhelmingly in favor of the liberal gun ownership rights. And I think about them and the average wage they're making is about $15 an hour, $15 an hour. And they have tremendous amount of money tied up in their gun collection. And I think there's an economic issue to be examined here, which is that their money is tied up in unproductive assets for them. I mean, they get some enjoyment out of it, but there's really no productivity that the economy gets out of how much wealth they have tied up in these assets. And these are humble people.
Well, very interesting points here, Sachin, jumping off points. Starting with this last one, the economics tied in to what Sachin says, an unproductive economy in gun collecting. Laura, what about that?
Well, I mean, it's a fascinating point, and this is where, interestingly enough, were there to be more laws about which types of guns could be sold, you could actually see some of those guns themselves become collector's items and rise in value. In other words, part of their sort of unproductive asset has to do with the wide availability of them in the marketplace. So certainly were there to be a reduced availability because of stricter gun laws, you would actually see some of those individuals have higher asset wealth in their gun collections.
And then his first question, what breaks this impasse, Laura Brown?
I do think that what breaks it is going to be a level of organization at the grassroots level. One of the problems that, Democrats do have just nationally on a whole host of issues is about the fact that their voters and their supporters are distributed in what political science describes as inefficient terms, meaning that they are largely centered in urban areas and they have very, very deep support in those places. But when you go to sort of more suburban or rural areas around the country, Democratic or liberal voters are really more few and far between. And this is part of the reason why the NRA is so effective. They have much more widespread support, and as a result, they're able to sort of bring pressure from all of these constituents to state legislatures as well as to the federal government in the terms of the number of members of Republicans in Congress.
Sachin, thanks for joining the conversation. Let's go to Jack now in Eau Claire. Hi, Jack.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have two responses to what I've heard so far this morning. The first is Ted Cruz very hypocritically gets on the podium and starts talking about this isn't the time to politicize this issue and, you know, how callous and how awful of people to do that, where Trump, just hours after a massacre of far fewer people in using a car, was calling the person a terrorist, wanting the person executed, yelling at Democratic senators, et cetera, et cetera. If that's not politicizing a tragedy, I don't know what is. The other thing that I wanted to respond to is all of these calls and the president, or I don't know, you might calling him the president, Trump, talking about this is a mental health issue. I want to know, what are the numbers of massacres caused by mental health in places like England and Australia and other countries that seriously limit the access to guns, in particular in military-style assault weapons? You know, it's not mental health. It's access, easy access to guns. Too many guns, too many murders.
Jack,
they just don't want to face it.
Jack, thanks so much for calling in. Laura, you mentioned in the outset of the hour that there is a large amount of guns in America. One statistic was 42% of the guns in the world are in the U.S.?
Yes. And in fact, the New York Times does have a great story on its website that does go through some of the research and some of the findings in this area. And it does note, as the caller suggests, that only 4% of the shootings in these mass shootings was related to mental health out of a 2015 study that was done into mass shootings. What I did bring up earlier is that part of the problem is that while there are more studies being done on shootings and gun deaths and gun violence and the gun culture generally, there hasn't been as much as one would expect in the United States, sort of given how many guns we do have.
Well, the midterm elections will take place 52 weeks from today. How big an issue might gun policy be on the campaign trail?
Well, we have an election going on today in two states, Virginia and New Jersey. We will see whether or not it does make a difference. The Virginia race for governor is incredibly close, and obviously we know that Virginia has been kind of a battleground state in the last few presidential elections, and so it will be interesting to see whether or not the Democratic candidate or the Republican candidate is able to prevail, and if some of that does have to do with, say, gun owners in rural Virginia or those who are in favor of gun control up in northern Virginia. So we might see some of that play out today. I don't know how much will play out sort of a year from now, in the sense that, you know, gun control and gun rights end up being kind of one of the many issues that people take with them in their sort of in terms of who they vote for, their whole issue profile. And obviously in midterm elections, we know much more has to do with essentially the favorability of the president at that time and the favorability of the Congress. And who's in the majority.
It's perhaps harder to eke out exactly what influence gun laws, gun policy, and a person's personal stake with guns is in terms of what they do at the ballot box.
That's right. And I think it's also important to realize that, as we've talked about on the show, that America does have something of a gun culture. I mean, it is interesting when you realize that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in some ways began in 1862 when Congress allowed essentially the IRS at that time within the Department of the Treasury to hire agents to stop organized crime and tax evasion. So there is this long, long history in the United States of gun owning and gun issues being something that the federal government needed to regulate and control.
And after a mass shooting, any politician who opens up his or her mouth is essentially, no matter what they say, no matter what statement they release, they too are politicizing this, are they not?
Yes, but again, I mean, this is where I always find this term somewhat problematic. Politics, as it is defined, is the process by which we resolve conflict nonviolently. So politics in and of itself should be thought of as a good thing. It is a process by which we resolve conflict in a nonviolent manner. That does mean, though, that there's probably going to be sharp rhetoric, and there are going to be kind of compromises or deals that are done that usually neither side likes. But certainly, politics in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, Lara, thank you so much for taking the time for being with us. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Lara Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's also the author of Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. She also served in the Department of Education during President Bill Clinton's administration. Her areas of expertise include presidential politics and elections, congressional incumbents, and American political parties. We can continue this conversation over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. How should Congress act in the wake of the mass shooting in Sutherland Springs and in the wake of the Las Vegas shooting last month? How should you see gun laws change in America? What would you want to ask your congressman to do in this situation? So go on the Ideas Network Facebook page where we can carry on this conversation. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Chris Molina. We had technical direction from Executive Director Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us.